This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices Hot Topics, episode number 9, was recorded on March 13th, 2020. I'm Eric Townsend. I really want to thank the people who have donated in recent days. It makes these extra episodes possible, and we really appreciate your support. Joining me now is Lenore Hawkins, reporting to us live, locked down in northern Italy. We're going to talk about what Lenore has experienced in both anticipating and then experiencing this crisis in a very personal, upfront way. Lenore, before we get started, please give our listeners just a little bit of a sense of who you are and your background in finance.
So I have two roles. One is with Tematica Research, where I'm the chief macro strategist, and we provide institutional research, which means that we've also created some thematic indices that are then turned into exchange-traded funds. And on the other hand, I do international M&A work, where about 7 years ago, I got an opportunity to move to Italy from my home in San Diego, where I help Italian companies who are looking for capital or strategic partnership to work with Americans, be it private equity or an American company looking to expand into Italy.
Okay, so finance background, now living in northern Italy, and I also want to give you credit because not only have you been following this story for as long as I have, I know you're a regular Macro Voices listener, but you also penned an article very much in line with what I said in yesterday's podcast. You predicted correctly that it's not so much about the death rate for this particular virus, it's about the serious complication rate and the risk of overwhelming medical facilities. So you're not just someone who understands this, you're someone who predicted it, wrote about it, really saw this coming. Then you had the experience, I would imagine there was no way initially of knowing that Italy is where it would first strike in a big way in the West. Please describe your experience. I'm assuming in the beginning, it felt like it does to me and to other people that that listen to Macro Voices. You know, we understand this. We're kind of ahead of things. People around us probably would think you're a nutcase if you're worried about a pandemic. I mean, that stuff's going on in China, the other side of the world. Who cares? What was it like, and how did the transition occur from everyone in denial, probably thinking you're just a nutcase to even write about this stuff, to holy cow, everything she said is coming true and it's happening to us?
The level of denial is rather breathtaking. So it started here in earnest on February 21st, Friday. I was coming, went and grabbed a sandwich with a colleague, and all over the news was these couple of cases that started just south of Milan. And we'd heard a few cases here and there. And as you do, you think life goes on normally. So nobody was terribly concerned about it. But then all of a sudden, now they're going to quarantine these towns. And my colleagues and friends were talking about, do we stay? Do we go? How bad do we think this is going to be? And we decided, well, I think we're going to stay. We're healthy. We might be needed. I went and looked at the numbers on this because I wanted to understand. You keep hearing people saying it's the flu, it's the flu. And intuitively, how can this possibly be the flu with the way that China had to respond? It's very easy to say, well, it's China and just, well, they're different or something. So I looked at the numbers of what happens with the flu. I took numbers from the CDC. And then I looked at what was happening here. And it starts with, well, first, how many people get it? And then what kind of hospitalization rates do you get? And then you eventually get to mortality rates. And when I ran the numbers, it became very obvious that this thing can quickly require so many hospital beds because people get it very fast. It spreads very quickly. And the hospitalization rate is really high. And I got very scared. I tried to explain this and nobody, you know, it's not going to happen. We've never seen this before. You kind of have your normalcy bias. So as the days went by and we kept hearing the number of cases going up and up and up, I expected to see people starting to change their behavior. Yes, on social media, you would see images of people buying a lot of products, particularly out of Milan. But I didn't really see that much of it. Even a week and a half ago, you could go into Piazza Volta and sit down, have your Aperol spritz, and everyone's just enjoying the sun and acting like everything's normal. But then it changed very, very quickly. Last weekend, they quarantined. The rumor got out on Saturday night, and by Sunday, the northern region was under quarantine. And that was just shocking. Everybody looked at each other. It was almost like 9/11, where something so stunning happened. The world turns upside down and you don't even know how to respond. That was on Sunday. And on Monday, the entire country was locked down because exactly what we had expected with doing the math had in fact happened. We have doctors here who are faced every day with having to decide who to try to save and who to let die because they do not have enough ventilators. They do not have enough equipment to keep fighting for everyone.
What was the experience of the people around you that you watched? Was it a case of everybody says, oh my gosh, this is real. It's happening. It's happening to us. Okay, we've got to start dealing with it. Or did some people stay in denial and just say, no, this the government must be wrong. This can't be happening. This isn't right.
The denial, even some are still a bit in denial, but the denial shifted pretty fast on Saturday night to Sunday to Monday. And by Monday, if you walked out your doors, and keep in mind too, Italy, very different from the United States in just kind of the infrastructure and the logistics. Here, most Italians don't have a big house with a big pantry and hop in the car and go down to Costco and buy 6 months worth of ketchup. Right? That's not how it works. So the culture, you don't even really refrigerate things here. The culture is you go down to your little frutti vendolo and you get your fruits and your fresh fruits and vegetables, and you only buy food for a day, maybe two at the most. So you don't have that concept of like loading up the way Americans might. And I think that kind of helps continue this sort of denial because people just, unless you really get shocked, you just continue on your life as normal. But by Monday, if you walked outside, everyone was wearing a mask. And just 2 days prior, no one was. If you walked outside, people are wearing gloves. They're staying far away from each other, nervously eyeing one another. And that's a culture that is very warm, that is very physical with one another. And now people are staying far away from one another. When you go to the grocery store, and this happened literally overnight, it went from you could go into a little local grocery store, no problem, nothing changed. And now if you go, the door is closed. You can't get in until you are let in by an employee who's wearing what looks like a hazmat suit. Everyone's standing outside, and there's not that many, but a few standing outside, you stand far apart from one another. And when you go in, everyone is just so nervous because everything you touch, you now realize you could be picking something up. And if not harming yourself, harming someone else that you maybe come in contact with.
Well, and it's something, there's so many little facets of culture that vary so much from one country to the next. One thing I remember about having visited that region as a tourist, if you go to the grocery store and you go to the produce area at a place, I remember one little market that I know you're familiar with, Dino Market in Lake Como. Mm-hmm. I walked up and started to reach and grab the produce to put it in my cart. Oh boy, they get really upset about that. The way the culture works in a normal time there, when there is no virus, is you tell an employee, I would like that head of lettuce, please, and they take it off the shelf for you. You're not allowed to touch it. That seems like a really fortuitous thing that the culture is already used to not doing self-service and letting the employee dole out the thing so that you don't have the produce aisle that every customer that came in behind you has touched the stuff and squeezed the oranges to see if they're fresh yet before taking them. How have those things changed as a result of this, and how have people adapted to it?
Yeah, that's pretty much the same, where keeping you kind of separate from the food. What is so striking is the way you greet one another, because everyone, including two men greeting each other, when you greet, you touch cheek to cheek, first on the right, then on the left. And now everybody stays about 6 feet away from one another and just sort of nods. And that is such a difference in a culture that really values that kind of intimacy, that kind of trust. And now you look at one another as potentially very dangerous.
And is that fear leading to any type of animosity or violence? I know one of the things that we've heard is there has been hate crimes against Asian people, as if, you know, an Asian guy who happens to be living in Milan, if it's somehow his fault that there was an outbreak of a virus in China, which doesn't make any sense. But, you know, people behave in strange ways. Have you seen anything like that occurring?
No, luckily I haven't really seen anything like that. I've been fortunate enough to only see more of the more angelic side, where people are really trying to help one another, particularly because Italy, the data coming out of Italy does skew, and the mortality rate and the hospitalization rate is going to be a tad higher here because you do have an older population than you do in the United States or in China. It's probably one of the oldest countries in the world as far as the average age. And clearly older people are much more susceptible to it. There's been a lot of helping older folk. But we haven't, thankfully, we haven't seen that kind of animosity. What you see, though, is kind of a PTSD in that everything is closed. I mean, just imagine what it is like. And this is something America is going to face. It may not be the entire country. I think it will, but it will at least be some significant regions will be faced with this, where every single business, except for food and pharmacies, will be shut down. Here, the hotels in Lake Como, one of the most popular vacation destinations in the world, every hotel is closed and empty. Every shop is shut. You can't even fathom what it is like to see no movement at all.
You talked a little bit earlier about how quickly you went from old normal to new normal. Tell us a little bit more about what new normal is like. What are the things that you might, I mean, you saw this coming. You wrote about this before it happened. What are the things that made you say, wow, I never saw this coming. I never thought this was going to happen.
It's one thing to look at the numbers and have kind of data points and statistics and probabilities in your head. It's another thing entirely to have to put on your virus armor when you leave the house, be afraid to touch anything, minimize, and of course, naturally, as soon as you go outside the house fully armored, your nose is screaming that it must be itched or you shall surely die. Of course, right? And then coming home and being so conscious of everything being potentially contaminated that you have to go in and scrubbing and scrubbing and scrubbing and washing your face, washing your nose, washing your mouth out because you're so afraid that you may get something that you could pass on to someone else. And I'm getting groceries for other people who are more vulnerable, and the decontamination process that you go through. And while that may sound silly, we have been told you need to do this. And the evidence is there that people are catching this. This thing is wildly out of control. And you have to respond because you don't know what mistake you might make that could cost someone their life. And that, it's one thing to see the data. It's another thing to live that.
Describe what you've seen observing people who have gotten sick in this environment. Obviously, you know, we would hope that people around them would have compassion and want to help them, but it's also very understandable that people around them would be afraid of catching it themselves. How does that all net out in terms of how people behave?
Oh, dear God, you do not want to sneeze in public. Talk about being a pariah. Most people have been pretty good because there is, it instantly, you know, normally, if you hear someone cough or sneeze or something, you don't really get that fussed about it. That changed almost overnight. And this is even like people weren't that stressed about it, even when if you went to lunch and you're sitting outside and all the tables around you, you can hear the word coronavirus, everyone's talking about it, but it's still the pressure wasn't there. Now the pressure is on, but we still have some people doing ridiculous things, like a gentleman who is in intensive care literally snuck out and got into a taxi, decided he wanted to go home, infecting everyone along his way.
Wow. And how do they deal with that? The guy needs medically to be put back into intensive care. There's an argument legally that he maybe deserves to be arrested, although that would just infect everybody else in the jail. How do they deal with a situation like that?
Well, now they're starting to put on fines. For example, if when I leave the house, I can go online and I have to print out this little form. Here's who I am, here's where I live, and here's what I'm doing. And I have to sign it. And if I get stopped, which I probably will, because the police are patrolling pretty heavily, the police and the army, they'll ask to see my ID and to see my form. And I have to give it to them. And if I am caught fibbing, and you're not supposed to go from one town to another, if you're caught fibbing, they're threatening that you can go to jail, if not very, very high fines. Now, whether they actually follow through on that, I don't know. But they had to do something to get people's attention. I mean, Italians aren't exactly ones who enjoy following the rules. I believe it was Mussolini who said, it's not difficult to govern the Italians. It's impossible. So getting this nation to follow took a lot. But hearing from doctors, and you see it on the news, you see the images, you see you have pictures in the newspaper of nurses falling asleep at their desks with all of their protective gear still on because they're utterly exhausted. It finally got people's attention. Unfortunately, it took too long.
Lenore, you predicted that the most difficult aspect of this crisis would be medical facilities becoming overwhelmed, and you actually wrote an article about that. Listeners, we've got a link to that article, which I encourage you to read. You can find the download link in the description of this podcast next to Lenore's picture on our homepage at macrovoices.com. Lenore, tell us, first of all, a quick overview of what you saw coming, but particularly, how did it play out, and how was it the same or different from what you expected as you went from being this, you know, this woman who wrote an article predicting that medical facilities somewhere in the world would be overwhelmed to all of a sudden, holy cow, it's happening around me right now, and you watched it go down. What was that experience like, and how did the actual experience compare to your predictions?
It happened much faster than I imagined, and in the probably about the past week, the kind of medical authorities here have come to the realization that this virus has been in the country much longer than they thought. It just hadn't become quite visible yet. And that is what I fear for the US as well. Because we did not know how many people we had no idea how fast the pace of hospitalization was going to occur. It was about 18 days. We went from the first, ooh, this is bad. We're going to quarantine these cities, just like what is happening in New Rochelle. 18 days later, the entire nation of 60 million people was shut down because hospitals all over could not keep up with the pace. I did not see that coming. I thought there'd be more time.
Okay, so it went down a lot faster than you expected it to. I want to talk also about what happened and whether it happened at all differently. One of the things that we learned from Dr. Chris Martinson's video, and listeners, if you listened to my update on COVID-19, which was a podcast, a Hot Topic number 7 that was published on Thursday, there was a link to Dr. Chris Martinson's video describing stories from doctors in Italy saying they literally were having to triage, to decide who they're going to try to help and help live and who they're going to allow to die. Lenore, was that just one crazy guy who is exaggerating, or is that an accurate depiction of what's going on systemically in Northern Italy right now?
That's accurate. We've spoken to quite a few doctors, and not only just individual doctors, but physicians who are in charge of entire departments throughout Italy, have just through friends and different work contacts. And they are all telling the same story, every one of them. The facilities are completely overwhelmed. The medical professionals are completely overwhelmed. They're having to work ungodly hours. Just no one could have imagined how bad it has gotten for them so fast. These people are working nonstop. They're making themselves utterly exhausted. They are then getting sick, and some of them are dying as well, trying to save everyone else. And yet the rest of the world watches what's happening here and just isn't taking it seriously. Even my family in Dublin, I have been yelling at them to take this seriously. They have me here living it. And I love the Irish, but they have that same kind of, oh, we're tough. It's not going to affect us. And that just seems to be what most are thinking. And now it's starting to happen there too. They're having to shut down schools, and it starts that way. It starts with the schools. It starts with a few little areas. And before you can even imagine it, the hospitals can't keep up.
Let's talk about some of the secondary or second order effects of that. Obviously, the most obvious problem here is the hospitals can't keep up and can't treat people. But you've also got the problem that those doctors and nurses, many of them have families. If they're shutting the schools down, then, you know, that means the parents of those kids have got to figure out what to do. If the kid's not in school, I can't get daycare because daycare is not really happening. Well, okay, I guess I have to stay home and take care of my kid. Wait a minute. I'm a doctor. I'm a nurse. I can't stay home and take care of my kid. There's lots and lots of people whose lives depend on my being at work. And now the school's telling me they don't have a place to take care of my kid during the day. What next? Is that kind of thing happening? And what other things are happening that are creating more stresses in the system that people maybe didn't see coming?
Yeah, that is definitely happening. Thankfully, Italy culturally is fairly tight-knit, and often you have families living close to each other, so you can get help there, because these healthcare workers, they can't go home because they could risk infecting someone else. Even if they're following all the precautions, they cannot be spending days treating COVID patients and then leave and go home. That could be just disastrous. So they're not going to see their families, and somebody else has to take care of their children. Thankfully, most are getting the kind of help that they need from friends and family. I think what is hard to understand if you're not seeing this is just the level of destruction for the economy. For example, a guy I know who was working in Innotek, he was the manager of it, just left and was going to start a new job in between, because Italy has a fairly high unemployment. It's at 9.8%. What's he going to do? He has no money coming in, and he's not starting another job. That's happening all over the place. They're talking about here, what they've decided to do is put a moratorium on mortgage payments. Only about 13% of Italians have a mortgage, whereas about 200 billion of bank bonds is in the hands of Italians who count on those bonds for income. If the banks aren't charging mortgages, how are they going to pay on those bank bonds? And you're talking about a nation that's already got the fourth highest debt to GDP in the world at 135%. And it needs to spend and spend and spend because no one's getting income. We see restaurants have all been forced to shut. Now, a few are trying to stay open just to provide delivery service in a desperate attempt to get some sort of cash flow. But there are stories circulating of people committing suicide because they don't think they're going to get through this. They can't afford it. That kind of trauma, I don't know how an economy recovers. How do you return to any kind of normalcy when the unthinkable has become a high probability?
Now, a suspension of mortgage payments helps homeowners. As I understand it, though, the people that are probably the lower income class in Italy are almost entirely renters. And furthermore, it's not renters to corporate landlords. It's usually individual landlords who are probably depending on that rental income to buy their own groceries and prescription drugs and so forth. So, is there anything that the government can do to, I mean, you can't tell people to stop paying rent because you potentially have the recipient of that rent is in as bad of a need as anyone else is. What do you do in that situation?
I think they're also talking about stopping tax payments, which will help a little bit. But I think they're going to have to end up doing the literal helicopter money, because Italy is not a really heavy home ownership culture the way the United States is. Tons of people rent. You've got a very different structure as far as the corporate side. Italy is really difficult with red tape. It's very difficult to grow a business. So you have the majority of businesses here are these tiny little mom and pop businesses. And then you have the massive multinationals that come in from the outside, because Italy is, it's difficult to grow. It's difficult to hire and fire. So you don't really get that kind of growth. How do you help all of those struggling little businesses, the gelateria that just opened up? What do you do to keep those guys afloat? And it becomes this kind of spiral of doom, and you borrow money from the bank. You can't pay your employees. You can't pay on the bank, but the Italian banks are already in a really bad state. what are they going to do? They need to pay their bank bonds. And you've got the European Central Bank saying, what are we going to do to help you guys? We're going to have to violate our own rules. There are no easy answers. You know, we've been talking about how this is a global pandemic at a time where central banks are pretty much out of bullets.
Let's move on now to what's coming for the rest of the world. What would you say as a person who has lived through this and is living through it right now? There's lots of people, and you know, they're well-meaning people. They're people who are operating from the information sources that are available to them. And they're saying, for crying out loud, the media is overhyping this whole thing. It sounds like it's very dangerous for people that are, you know, very elderly and have underlying conditions. That's true of the seasonal flu too. You know, I'm a guy in my 40s or 50s. My whole family is, I don't have anybody in my family that's over 70. There's no reason to worry about this. It's just going to be a bad flu. Yeah, maybe most of us are going to get it. So what? It's a week off of work to get recovered. What's the big deal? I think that really is a pretty accurate reflection of what a lot of people think across Europe, in the UK. In the UK, the attitude of the government seems to be, well, we'll just let it burn through it. We'll ask people who are particularly at risk, elderly and people with underlying conditions, to self-isolate. For everybody else, we'll just let it burn through like a bad flu season. It'll be over before you know it. Don't worry. What would you say to people who have heard that message from their governments or media? What do you think lies ahead for them that they might not see coming?
Do you have any friends who are pregnant? Where are they going to deliver their baby? Have you ever been in a car accident? What happens if you are and the hospitals are already completely overrun? You have children? Do you count on being able to get some medical attention for them if they just get into an accident the way kids do? That all is utterly impossible when this hits. No medical facilities right now, the doctors that we know are saying, do not get sick. Whatever you do, do not get sick. Do not get into a car accident. Do not cut your hand making dinner. Whatever you do, do not need medical facilities, because they simply will not exist. Even if you squirrel yourself away at home and you think, oh, to hell with the rest of the world. I don't, you know, we'll be fine. We're going to sit this out. God help you if you need anything at all. And all of us know somebody who's on, needs diabetic medication, because you're also, if everything has to shut down, and that's what's happening here, how do we get food? How do we get deliveries? I can't get anything that I need. If I needed to get medication, that's slowly starting to come to a halt where you can't get the things that you need.
Lenore, let's move on to the financial market aspects of this. As we began taping this interview first thing on Friday morning, the S&P futures were locked limit up. Right after midnight, there was a huge bout of buying in just about everything. Crude oil was up. Futures, E-mini S&P futures were up. Everything was up. Just as we started talking, 9:30 came around, market opened. There was a little bit of a pop higher above that limit lock level, but it looks like we're now starting to see markets roll over a little bit. I think that from just what I get on Twitter and reading around, most market participants are still seeing this as a buy the dip opportunity. They're seeing it as, okay, it's a medical thing. It's causing people to become personally fearful. That's bringing emotion into the market. That's what caused the panic selling. But boy, to get all the way down to 2,400 on the S&P at about midnight last night, that was clearly just panic. The bottom is in. It's got to be uphill from here. It's time to buy. I'm not buying, Lenore. I don't know about you. I have been the only person that I've heard so far say, folks, it's time to think about whether this is going to be bigger or smaller than the great financial crisis of 2008. And I think that the evidence for bigger is really starting to pile up. And I don't think this is over at all. What's your perspective?
I totally agree. The great financial crisis, you could kind of get your arms around it, right? Because that was a debt situation, liquidity situation. It was about the markets. It was about numbers that we could actually comprehend. So you could model it out and kind of get a feel for just how bad the whole thing could be. The problem with this is we have no idea what we're dealing with. If we put aside the, oh, it's fine, I'm not going to get sick, let's just deal with the reality for every country who's faced this so far, where it has hit that critical mass. China shut down 60 million people. And China was able to do that because their culture is a little bit more inclined to listen to what, or to have to listen to what they're told to do. So they were more successful. You've had Japan and South Korea are actually having a little bit of a better run of it with this. And that's most likely because they experienced SARS. They know the drill. They've been through this before. They are not going to be in denial the way the West is so far. You've just seen the eighth largest economy in the world brought to its knees by a tiny little microorganism. And we do not know when it's going to get going again. We have no idea. Then you look over at the US, all the data so far, it's completely unprepared. There's not enough tests. And that's, talk about a big difference. Italy has been testing like crazy. You sneeze, they test you. So that helps slow the pandemic. The United States is not testing people. They don't have enough tests and they're not taking it seriously. So I think the risks there are enormous. So we do not know just how much of the world's economies could be shut down. And we have no idea for how long. If I don't know that, then how do I get my arms around the possible impact to earnings? And then on top of that, this whole thing was sitting on top of a level of corporate debt that the world has never before seen. The largest buyer of equities for years has been corporations. An awful lot of that's been through share buyback, or the share buybacks. They've been funding that with debt. Well, they're not doing that now. We're seeing where companies are having to tap their entire line of credit just to stay alive. So the biggest buyer of equities has left the market. We do not know just how bad the hit is going to be to earnings. To me, that looks like it has the potential to be an awful lot worse than what we saw in the great financial crisis.
Lenore, I want to move on to a subject that's very much near and dear to my heart, which is energy prices, particularly crude oil. And the way that I've looked at this crisis is, okay, I'm pretty darn sure that central banks are going to step up and they're going to print money in order to deal with this. They're going to support the economy. They may go to directly the Fed buying stocks in order to save the stock market. There's a lot of reasons to expect government intervention to come to the rescue of finances. On the other hand, they can't print storage tanks out of thin air. And if you have to shut the economy down or substantially shut most of the economy down, cut back dramatically on international travel, if you have less people driving, less demand for gasoline, it all results in a situation, and this is something that people that don't understand the oil business don't know, is you can't just go to the producers that operate oil wells and say, hey, turn those things off for a couple of weeks. It doesn't work that way. You know, shutting in an oil well is a big, expensive process. So they're going to keep producing. We're going to run out of storage tanks. And I expect a super contango situation where I don't expect long-dated crude oil futures to crash because everybody knows we're going to get through this. But I think we could get to the point where the front month is selling at just a fantastic discount to longer dated futures because there's no place to put the oil that's being produced. What do you think, and oil is particularly my interest area, I guess the other ones would be industrial commodities like copper and so forth. Where do you think the vulnerabilities are that cannot be cured with money printing, with central bank intervention?
I think that's exactly it. There's so much you can do in the financial economy, but the financial economy is not the real economy. In the real economy, you have to have a place to put these raw materials. Steel mills, for example, in the industrial sector, you can't just shut it down, like you were saying, with oil extraction or oil refineries. You can't just go, oh, we're gonna turn it off for today. It's an extremely expensive to turn off, to just take that whole thing down and to start it up. The same thing with a lot of these industrials, like steel production. You can't just turn it on and off. I think what we're seeing that's sort of interesting right now is what's going on in shipping. Because like you said, they're going to have to keep producing. And we have an all out, you know, as if it weren't enough, a global pandemic at the time where central banks were almost out of bullets, the highest level of corporate debt. And just for the fun of it, let's throw in an oil price war where Saudi Arabia, Russia, and the US are going all at it. Saudi Arabia can, as I understand it, they can produce down in the single digits. Shale oil guys can't. they've got a ton of debt. Okay, central banking probably help with that, right? Because we can play in the financial market with the financial economy with that. But what are you going to do with all this oil? And we're seeing some interesting things there with shipping, because that's where you can store it, right? You could put it on some of these ships until we run out of ships that can be floating around just having what oil is being produced. And then at that point, you've got to shut down. And that is, talk about just skyrocketing costs when you've already got a problem with, you keep producing, massive demand shock, and now you're going to even increase your price more by having to do these costly shutdowns.
Lenore, I have one more question about what you've seen in terms of changing behavior as people come to terms with what's happening around them. A lot of people, a lot of Americans, have been very outspoken on social media saying, hey, that stuff that went down in China, this is America, baby. I know my constitutional rights. Nobody can lock me down. I'm going to go where I want, when I want, and there's no way, the government doesn't have the authority to impose any kind of lockdown, and if they do, I'm going to ignore it because I know my rights, and many of them on guns as well. Do you think that that's just a reflection of people maybe not realizing what's coming, and their attitude will change when they realize the enormity of the situation? Or do you think that that celebration of individual liberties, which of course is a wonderful thing for the most part in the United States, maybe is going to get us in trouble this time?
That's such a tough question. I am such a lover of liberty. I think the American Constitution is one of the most beautiful things ever written, but this is one of those rare times where that kind of damn it, it's my freedom, is really gonna bite us in the butt. It isn't about your freedom. It is about that other people have the right to not die. And it's this very strange case, right? We understand as lovers of liberty that it's okay for you to swing your fist as long as you swing in your fist doesn't slam into my face. This is a case where you swinging your fist is just you walking around and not treating this seriously is endangering other people's lives because of the transmission. You have this invisible fist that can be swinging around and hurting other people. And the sooner people understand that it is, you need to respect other people's rights as well, I think the sooner that we can get our arms around this, the sooner that transmission rate can slow. And it's very difficult because you don't see it. It's not immediately obvious, but it becomes really obvious when you start seeing those images of people dying in hospitals.
Yeah, it feels to me like we almost need some kind of an internet campaign to allow it to be their idea. You know, I have the constitutional right to go out and do what I want, but I choose. It's my choice to respect the health of my fellow Americans by staying the heck home.
We actually got that trending. It's funny you say that. We have trending right now in Italy on Twitter is hashtag Io Resto a Casa. It's I'm staying at home. There's a bunch of different permutations of that, but it's I'm staying at home became the trending thing. It is I am taking responsibility for this. I am taking responsibility for not harming anyone else by going outside.
I really hope that we can get that trending so that the people who would resist the government telling them what they cannot do will choose of their own volition to do the right thing for society. In that note, Lenore, we're pretty much out of time. I really want to thank you for, sorry to say, taking time away from your busy day. You're locked down and can't go outside in Italy. So I guess you have time for this. I really want to, I'm sure that this is going to be a super popular interview because it's the first bit that I've heard where it's really somebody boots on the ground who knows our American culture very well, but is in a culture that is foreign to you, but you're very familiar with because you've lived there, and you're experiencing what's happening as this horrible plague hits a country that didn't see it coming. And I certainly hope that other countries have a better experience than what you and the Italians around you have experienced. Before I let you go, please tell us a little bit more about what you do at Tematica Research and also your Twitter handle so that our listeners can follow you.
Sure. So at Tematica Research, we have a bunch of indices that are based on these major themes that we see in the world around us that are very relatable. And the idea for these is that these are events, these are changes occurring in society that have massive tailwinds that provide better investment returns in the long run. That's at tematicaresearch.com. It's with a T instead of thematic. It's T-E-M-A-T-I-C-A research.com. And follow me on Twitter. I love to talk about all this, and I'm keeping everyone posted on what is going on in the wild world of quarantine land. You can find me at Elles, E-L-L-E-S, economy. It's my middle name. So Elles Economy at Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Lenore. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.